Good morning. I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up, the latest news related to COVID, including a conversation with the Boulder County Public Health Department's medical officer. We'll also hear from an immigrant rights advocate about the COVID pandemic in detention centers. And it's Veterans Day. A veteran will share his reflection on being a gay man in the Navy in the 1980s. Our two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally, and then BBC headlines again at the bottom of the hour, followed by commentary from Jim Hightower. At 8:35 this morning, Dr. Chris Urbina will join us to talk about COVID in Boulder County. He's the medical officer with Boulder County Public Health. And then the first episode of a new podcast on homelessness in Boulder. It's produced by the Boulder Weekly and KGNU's Maeve Conran. All that's still ahead after these headlines from Jamie Sudler.
Public health officials are urging the state to take more aggressive steps to control outbreaks of the coronavirus, including imposing stay-at-home orders. The Denver Post reports that county health officials, including Jeff Zayek of Boulder Public Health and Bill Berman of Denver's agency, say that the county-by-county approach worked earlier in the summer, but now the transmission of COVID-19 is so widespread that it's not possible to use those more local measures and be successful in controlling the disease. However, state officials are reluctant to issue another statewide lockdown, preferring local governments to take the lead. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said in a statement that local agencies can enact guidance that is stricter than the state's, and they do not need approval to do that. The department said that it would support local orders to stay at home if made. Some counties have surpassed the threshold for level red that would impose a lockdown, but they have not yet been moved to that most severe level of restrictions. The county official health officials wrote that while they appreciate the state is being cautious, they fear the failure to impose stricter orders now will do more harm than good. Colorado reported nearly 3,400 new cases of coronavirus yesterday, and hospitalizations continued to reach record levels. More than 1,100 people with the virus are in hospitals, and 84% of the state's intensive care unit beds are in use. The Boulder County Health Department updated the Boulder City Council on the status of COVID-19 in the community last night, and it wasn't good. Like the rest of the state and country, cases and hospitalizations are on the rise. Jeff Zayek, Boulder County Public Health Executive, said local hospitalizations are consistently increasing.
Unfortunately, the news I bring you today is worse than the news that I brought you last time. We are clearly headed in the wrong direction. In Boulder County, this is obviously not just a Boulder County, not even just a state problem or a regional problem. We are seeing this happen nationally, and we're coming to a critical juncture here in Boulder County. We are now in record new territory. Unfortunately, what you see with some of those steep upticks, that's a lot of new hospitalizations in a very short period of time.
Zayek noted that the number of new cases in Boulder County is the highest in Longmont, followed by Boulder. He said there were about 60 hospitalizations when the virus was at its peak in the spring, but it's now higher, with 89 people hospitalized in Boulder County on Tuesday. He acknowledged that COVID fatigue is real and said he hears about calls to the Boulder Chamber of Commerce.
I want people to know that I get calls from our chamber. They talk about businesses that are calling up and they're in tears because they can't make it another day or another week. They're losing their businesses. They're losing their livelihoods. They can't meet the needs of their families. And the individual decisions that people make are going to absolutely drive what happens in these communities. And it's going to have a significant impact. We have to take it seriously. We have to social distance. We have to not gather. I know this is difficult going into the fall, but it's critical, and it's really critical right now.
The number of people in Boulder County currently infected by COVID-19 is 1 in 100 residents. We'll hear more from Boulder County Public Health later in the morning magazine. In other news from the Boulder City Council, members approved an ordinance last night that helps establish a police oversight panel. The panel was supposed to help fix transparency and accountability, but as KGNU's Roz Brown reports, not everyone thinks it will improve relations between the police and the community.
A reform police oversight committee was initiated after a 2019 incident between a Black Naropa University student and a Boulder police officer. The incident drew national attention and outraged many local residents who felt it was an example of racial profiling. Since then, a community group worked for more than a year to design an ordinance that led to the hiring of the city's first independent police monitor. Councilmember Aaron Brockett weighed in at last night's virtual city council meeting, calling it a new day for policing in Boulder.
I'll just note that the monitor and this oversight committee are independent, right? They're independent of the police department and will function independently as separate entities. So I think it's a good set of checks and balances.
But not everyone agrees with Brockett. During the public hearing, Misha Tour argued that the task force is not a progressive solution.
You're allowing the cops to investigate themselves and decide how to reform themselves. I hope you see the irony here. At best, this committee will be useless. At worst, it paints an anti-racist veneer over a deeply racist, violent, occupying force.
Marcus Espina noted that the panel won't be separate from the Boulder Police Department, and the chief of police will have the final say on any disciplinary action following a citizen complaint.
If the city council has final say in who gets to be on this police oversight panel, then the panel's legitimacy is a stillbirth. Boulder City Council has repeatedly sided with the police department on issues of covert and overt violence, especially against the unhoused communities through sweeps. The city council in reality does not represent the public interest at all. Most city council members never answer the phone calls from the community and their voicemail boxes are full.
In the case of the Naropa student, Boulder determined the officer violated department policy, but an independent review found no evidence of racial profiling and the officer was allowed to resign with a city severance package. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
The Boulder Valley School District will switch to all remote learning starting November 17th because of skyrocketing coronavirus case numbers. The Daily Camera reports that Superintendent Rob Anderson announced the move at yesterday's school board meeting. The district is now operating on a hybrid learning model with elementary students attending 4 days in person, middle school attending 2 days, and high school attending 1 day. However, as of next Tuesday, students will be using remote learning through at least January 5th, which is the end of the winter break. After Thanksgiving, the district will review case rates and consider bringing back students with intensive special needs. Anderson said case increases have stretched the contact tracing capabilities of both the health department and the district team, overwhelming the district to the point they can't keep up and likely can't implement quarantines quickly enough to control the spread. In other action, the Boulder Valley School Board approved a resolution directing the superintendent to end the resource officer program while creating new options to ensure safety and improve discipline practices. The board voted 6-1 to approve the resolution, which is based on concerns that students of color are more likely to be ticketed, arrested, suspended, or expelled. School board member Donna Myers cast the lone dissenting vote. The Daily Camera reports that the target rate to end the SRO program is January 2022. The weather today will be mostly sunny with a high near 47 and breezy conditions. Tomorrow, sunny with the high around 45. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Twelve minutes after 8 now at listener-supported KGNU. A group of immigrant rights and peace and justice groups held a caravan earlier this week, traveling to different detention centers in the metro area to draw attention to the COVID pandemic inside these facilities. KGNU's Rosana Longo spoke with Jennifer Piper from the American Friends Service Committee.
The reason that these human and civil rights organizations are joining together is to make a call to release them all. The GEO Detention Center is a for-profit center where immigrants are detained on civil immigration. They are facing deportation, but they're also facing a crisis of COVID inside the detention center, an outbreak that's active right now. There are at least 31 people who are being in quarantine or who are being watched that have active cases. And then the Denver County Jail on Smith Road. The county jail has its second outbreak. The first one ended on October 20th, and the second one began on October 29th. We're very concerned for the people inside that jail because the numbers of people being held in that jail have increased significantly over the last few weeks as COVID has been increasing.
In the midst of an increase in the spread of COVID-19, Colorado carceral places present more than 24 outbreak sites: the American Friends Service Committee, the Colorado Freedom Fund, the Colorado People's Alliance, and the Immigrant Freedom Fund of Colorado have been holding multiple site caravans to call for release of people deprived of their liberty to places they can safely quarantine. Jennifer Piper, with the American Friends Service Committee of Colorado, is concerned for another massive outbreak at El Paso County Jail.
The other facility that's experiencing a huge outbreak right now is El Paso County Jail, where close to 700 people detained have tested positive for COVID. And in that situation, the jail had to bring the National Guard in to assist them with rapid testing because there were so many people and the outbreak spread so quickly. It's really life or death right now. For people inside the facilities and for their loved ones, we're very concerned for them. And we need folks to join us in calling on everyone from the president to Congress to the governor to localities to reduce and release the people inside these carceral settings before a life is lost.
Piper says that there are two concerns. One is the humanitarian crisis due to the outbreaks of COVID-19 and the concern about the resources spent on immigration enforcement instead of rehabilitation and other urgent needs in our society.
There's sort of two issues. One is the urgency that COVID presents for public health and for the lives of people who are being detained or who are in jail or who are in prison. And those three settings look exactly the same. An immigration detention center does not look any different than a jail or a prison. They are jails and prisons. But the reason you're there is because you lack a piece of paper. That's the reason you're deprived of your liberty. But in all of those settings, what's urgent right now is COVID and not only the possibility of losing your life, but the long-term impacts, health impacts that COVID has been shown to have on vulnerable populations. And so what we're calling for is humanitarian release in all of those settings. And then the second piece of that puzzle is the resources that we're spending as a country on immigration enforcement and detention, as well as on jails and prisons.
Our country's incarceration rate is the highest in the world, says Piper.
We incarcerate more people than any other country in the world. A larger percent of our population is incarcerated than China's, than Iran, than some of the governments that we really point the finger at. And so it's important that we take a step back as we're going into potentially a new Congress, with a new administration, and say, is this the priority? And for us as organizations, it's not. We believe these resources could be spent on things that benefit our whole community: education, climate, mitigating climate change, creating food security and housing security for people in our communities. This is billions of dollars that we're spending on punishing people and not on their rehabilitation or on bettering our society. So our call is to free them all. Under COVID, the urgency is so high. But even if there were to be a vaccine tomorrow, we know that these settings don't help people become transformed and become a part of our society. And we know that these settings don't really provide us safety as a community. The things that provide us safety are education and food security, housing security, mental health resources. That's what makes us a strong community.
Since the beginning of this pandemic, Jennifer Piper has seen Immigration and Customs Enforcement deport people who tested positive for COVID-19.
What we've seen Immigration and Customs Enforcement do since the beginning of this pandemic is deport people who, shortly after being deported, do test positive for COVID-19. In fact, that was one of the main drivers of the pandemic into Guatemala and El Salvador at the beginning of the pandemic were people being deported who had contracted COVID-19 inside immigration detention. And right now, our government has detained thousands of people from Cameroon. It's an African country, and they have placed them on an express path to deportation. The country right now of Cameroon is basically in a civil war. There's economic insecurity. There's tons of violence. They've already begun deporting people. There are four people inside the geo-detention facility right now who are from Cameroon and who are facing this imminent deportation. And it's a violation of human rights. It's a violation of our asylum treaties. It's a violation of public health. And, unfortunately, this agency cannot be trusted to think about the balance between the public health globally, people's human rights, and this administration's very express anti-immigrant and anti-Black policies.
That is Jennifer Piper with the American Friends Service Committee of Colorado, a Quaker-based peace and justice organization. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
20 minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. It's Veterans Day, and U.S. Navy veteran Danny Meyer has this remembrance of what it was like to be gay and a sailor in the 1980s.
In those days, we served in silence, and not one day passed when you didn't worry that you were going to be found out. When men are at sea, they horse around, and so they wrestle on the floor with 30 guys shouting, but when anybody wanted to do that with me, I would grab their neck and bounce their head against the bulkhead and say, I don't go for that. And so, unintentionally, I got a reputation as the straightest guy around. Meyer won't do that even for a joke, you know. And there was a witch hunt for homosexuals, which happened periodically, and the officers called me in. And they said, Meyer, you're the only one we can be sure of. Will you help us find these people? And I said, I don't know nothing about that. So you lead a lonely life, you know. You're an island all by yourself. Sometime later, I was at Fleet Headquarters, and two men in suits called me in by surprise. And they said, Meyer, we're doing a routine investigation for your clearance, and in the course of that investigation, we found out that you are a... And between that word and the next, I died. I went, now the hell begins. And then the guy finished the sentence and said, are a user of marijuana. And I wanted to jump up and down and laugh. But it was just so terrifying that 40 years later, I remember that moment like it was yesterday.
U.S. Navy veteran Danny Meyer, thanks to StoryCorps for that reflection on this Veterans Day. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock, time for a regular Wednesday morning feature, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Mitch McConnell just called the Senate back into session Monday, and they will be considering bills between now and November 22nd. The very first item on McConnell's agenda was to try to confirm a slew of new federal judges during this lame duck session. Over the past 4 years, Mitch McConnell has also called himself the Grim Reaper for the 400-plus House bills that he is allowing to languish on his desk. I'm not sure what else will top the Senate agenda, but here are some possibilities. Senate Bill 3841 deals with rebates and other financial props to our ailing economy. It seems likely that some kind of COVID relief bill will have to be considered. There is also the HEROES Act, passed by the House and revised to bring it down in a cost closer to what Republicans would be willing to pay. Nancy Pelosi and the Trump White House were hundreds of millions of dollars apart from each other when the Senate went into recess, but now negotiations are almost certain to resume. But there are other bills which may or may not make it to the floor. Senate Bill 3895 would reform police practices. That one may well languish on McConnell's desk and never see the light of day. Chuck Schumer has submitted a bill, SB 729, which would prohibit the use of federal funds to challenge the scientific consensus on climate change. Under the Trump administration, high-level officials have been placed in government bureaus like the Environmental Protection Agency, and they have publicly stated their belief that human-caused climate change is a hoax or at least questionable. It seems unlikely that Schumer's bill will ever see the floor of the Senate as long as McConnell remains the Grim Reaper, and after January 20th, such a bill may become unnecessary. Senator Cory Booker has introduced SB 387, which would prohibit employers from asking about a person's criminal history on the initial job application. They can still ask about it in an interview, but at least employers won't be able to toss an application in the trash without even talking to a prospective employee. I would guess the chances of this bill seeing the light of day are also low. There are also several bills that have passed the House and which languish on McConnell's desk. Starting with HB 1, a comprehensive bill to give Americans easier access to the ballot box and try to get dark money and large donors out of elections. It was the first bill Nancy Pelosi pushed through the House this year. It might have been nice to have her around. It might have been nice to have around last week, but the issues remain relevant for future elections. There is also HB 1585, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which was in force for almost two decades before Republicans let it sunset. This is a good time to remind you that currently there will be 50 Republican senators and 48 Democrats. There are two special elections coming up in Georgia in early January. GOP Senator Kelly Loeffler, who was appointed to her seat earlier this year, runs against Democratic challenger Raphael Warnock, an African-American pastor from Atlanta. Republican incumbent Senator David Perdue will face a Democratic challenger, John Ossoff, a documentary filmmaker. Georgia has already voted for Biden, and Stacey Abrams and her team from Fair Fight claims that these Senate seats can be won by the Democrats, even if they are currently running as underdogs. Fair Fight also advocates against voter suppression. If you'd like to find out more about this effort, you can visit fairfight.com. You can also contact your senators if you'd like them to hear your thoughts on some of the bills I've discussed. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. We have been doing a journey up the chakras about how we can come through the current chaos in a better way, because we know that what was going on before wasn't working all that great. Remember? And so here we are at level green, which corresponds to the heart center. So what can we do to make a better world? Because we need it. And we need to do what we can in our own homes. Are you growing a garden? Could you create an edible lawn? You know, we're using a third of our nation's water to water grass, and that's not really sustainable for the health of the planet. Maybe you can grow something on your porch, grow sprouts, grow something on your balcony. And maybe you can get together with the homeowners associations and advocate for a garden rather than pesticides and lawnmowers that wake you up on Sunday morning. That would be great. So, you know, green is also about getting our finances in order. Do you have a will? You know, if you're over 40, you might want to think about having a will. We never know how long we have on this planet. And, you know, green is also about how we can live more green. And there are so many toxic chemicals being sold that people think they're cleaning their house with, but as they clean their house, they're poisoning the planet. Maybe it's time to learn how you can clean using things like white vinegar and baking soda and a little bit of Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap. You know, you can clean just about anything, the toilet, the bathtub, the sink, the floor. If you add a few drops of essential oil, it smells great. And then you even have more fun cleaning. And of course, you could put some good music on. So clean green. And green is also about thinking about our immune systems. Eating greens on a regular basis is important, but also eating all the colors of the rainbow. But I also feel that we need to breathe more deeply to take in air. If you're wearing a mask, take it off when you are alone outside as much as you can. You might want to put a few drops of essential oil on your mask, or maybe you want to diffuse some essential oils as a way of making your home a safer place for your family and the few that gather there. Essential oils that are antimicrobial are things like peppermint, tea tree, oregano, lavender, fir, pine. So these are just a few things we can do to be more in harmony. And I thank you for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Naturally with Brigitte Mars every Wednesday morning at about 8:25 during the KGNU Morning Magazine.